Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us again, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will bring on guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases, entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. And we'll introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's show. This is one powerful way that we can make a positive difference together. Now, before we get to our guests, I want you to know that I'm grateful to all of you that take your precious time to listen to or watch this show, because remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network and download a copy. Give it 21 days and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your family. Now, a quote, although it's not one that's from the journal, but it fits this show much better. The quote is, "The wisdom and compassion a woman can intuitively experience in childbirth can make her a source of healing and understanding for other women." And this is by Stephen Gaskin. Now, with that in mind, our guest, Bailey Gaddis, is the author of Asking for a Pregnant Friend, 101 Answers to Questions About Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood, as well as a childbirth preparation educator and hypnotherapist. She is a regular contributor to media outlets, including Working Mother, Fit Pregnancy, Pregnancy and Newborn, Cosmopolitan, Woman's Day, Disney Babble, I've not heard of that one, and more. Now, she also volunteers for a program where she offers in-home support to parents of newborn babies, specifically single mothers and those with babies that have special needs. So, Bailey, welcome again to Answers Network.
Hi, Alan. Thank you for having me.
Well, it is my pleasure. And Bailey, I believe that you were on the show about 4 years ago. And when at that time, we spoke about one of your other books, which was, I believe, Feng Shui Mama. And how has life changed for you since then?
In many ways, you know, one of the best things that came out of that book is I've had probably thousands of women reach out to me with questions, with stories. So it's been really neat to expand, you know, that network and to just be exposed to, you know, so many different types of, you know, dilemmas and birthing experiences and pregnancy experiences. So that's been really amazing. And I've, you know, continued to teach and then obviously wrote this new book, which, you know, in so many ways came from all of these amazing, you know, questions and connections that I've made with women.
Well, let's tell us about the new book. And is it the questions that you kept getting from other people that inspired you to put them together to write this book?
That was definitely part of it. One of the biggest catalysts as well was my own experience when I was pregnant with my son, because I had all sorts of questions that triggered a lot of shame, a lot of embarrassment, and I just shoved them down. I tried to forget about them. And when I started receiving, you know, all of the questions from women after my first book, I was so relieved, because a lot of the questions were ones that I had been too embarrassed to ask. So it lightened my emotional load, because I realized, okay, I wasn't some weird anomaly. These are questions and concerns that so many women have, but not a lot of people are talking about them, at least in a non-judgmental way. So it was twofold, you know, my own experience and then connecting with these women and wanting to provide, you know, a compassionate, accurate resource to answer all of those questions that can sadly induce, you know, shame and embarrassment.
So what do you think some of the changes have been from a societal standpoint that has taken something so beautiful and so wonderful, and left young women with concern and shame and these negative emotions that really shouldn't be surrounding this at all?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the things is fear. You know, unfortunately, there is a lot of fear in the birthing culture, especially in the United States. You know, a lot of the popular, you know, images that we are exposed to regarding birth, even if it's supposed to be funny, it's really traumatic. And it's usually a woman screaming and yelling at her partner, and it just looks like pure agony. So that's what many women imagine when they're thinking about childbirth. So that's a big one. And then, you know, with social media, it can be an amazing source of connection, but it can also expose women to a few different things. So one is judgment. You know, you see somebody, like, for example, I recently saw this beautiful post from a pregnant woman that was very raw, very open about her experience. And there was a lot of shame in the comments. And I just imagined, oh my gosh, if a woman, you know, read this post and connected with it and then read the comments, she would immediately feel a lot of shame. So that's part of it. And then with, you know, how our culture explores, you know, sexuality, and we've really been taught to separate, you know, sexuality from motherhood, when in so many ways, I mean, they're intertwined. So that stirs up a lot of shame, you know, dealing with sex and arousal and different things that organically come up during pregnancy and childbirth. And women feel like, ooh, there must be something wrong with me if I'm having questions about these things or having these physical sensations during, you know, the journey into motherhood. So those are a few things that, yeah, contribute.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting. I'm putting together some stuff in regards to a book, and I'm trying to also answer questions. The whole part of the show is the Answers Network. So I'm trying to answer questions. And so I have a title for the book, and then I have a number of questions that I'm going to answer or recommendations that I'm going to make. Yours has 101 answers to questions that apparently women are too embarrassed to ask about pregnancy or childbirth or motherhood. How did you decide on 101 questions? And with me, with what I'm doing, I'm thinking, I don't know how you tackled 101 questions. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah, it took a lot of time. I asked for a significant amount of time, and a silver lining of COVID for me was it gave me plenty of time to write. So that was helpful. Yeah. And, you know, with choosing the questions, I actually had 300 questions to choose from.
Wow.
So it was amazing on one hand to have so much, you know, potential content to choose from, but also a little overwhelming. And how I selected the questions that ended up in the book, they were the questions that were really hard to find good information about, because, you know,
that makes sense.
Google is where a lot of women go to, especially if they're embarrassed about something, they Google it. And so I Googled all of these questions, and a lot of times you could find something about that topic, but a lot of the emotion-based questions, there would be like an online forum or chat room that was discussing it. But, you know, going back to that judgment, a lot of the responses were very mean, very unhelpful, and would just exaggerate the shame. And then a lot of the questions that have to do with, you know, the body, the information was either contradictory or really confusing. So I worked with two doctors, a midwife, and two psychologists on, you know, all of the questions to really make sure that, you know, we were utilizing the most recent research, and I was making sure that this was kind of like a one-stop shop for, again, that accurate, compassionate information.
See, I think that's beautiful, because I, you know, as you were saying that, I was thinking that, you know, there's probably places, you know, like, you know, MedMD or something like that, where there are certain types of questions that they can get an answer and go, yeah, I can feel pretty comfortable with that. It's, you know, there's not a lot of haters on that. You know, it's more doctors that are providing valuable information. But to answer a lot of those questions that you're not going to get a medical answer or an answer, I think that's really nice. Now, of these questions, what are some of the most common ones that you've been asked, either for the book or as a doula or as a childbirth educator?
Yeah. So there's a couple. One of the big ones is about women feeling aroused when breastfeeding. And that triggers, again, a lot of shame because women feel like I'm doing this act that's, you know, so incredibly maternal, but then I'm feeling similar physical sensations as I do when I'm aroused. Mm-hmm. And so it was really interesting to dive into this one because I realized, okay, there's very normal biological functions going in the going on in the body that cause this. You know, the body releases oxytocin, the love hormone that is released during breastfeeding and during sex. The uterus has mild contractions during breastfeeding, and the same thing happens during an orgasm. So I, you know, try to let women know that all that's happening is this very natural biological response. It's not at all about strange ideas about the baby or anything like that. So try to encourage women to enjoy those sensations instead of feel shame. A lot of questions about infidelity and insecurity in a relationship, specifically during pregnancy. So I really dive into that and was actually really surprised to find that about 10% of partners do stray, you know, when their significant other is pregnant. And so looked into why does that happen? Yeah, you know, and two of the main reasons that researchers found was that, you know, a lot of women, some women, they're more aroused during pregnancy, but some feel really sick. And that's the last thing that they want to do is connect in that way with their partner. So in some cases, the partner that is not receiving as much physical attention seeks it elsewhere. And then on the emotional side, a lot of women are going through so much of their own, like this big emotional journey, and they don't have much space left to support their partner in their own emotional journey. And so again, that can lead to somebody seeking that support elsewhere. But of course, nobody's a statistic, right? You know, and it's all about communication. And so I really get into that with all of these questions, not just like, here's why it happens, but trying to go deeper, like, and now here's how we can explore it and hopefully find some relief.
But that's one of the things that I liked about the book. Unfortunately, and for those of you out there, you know, I get an advanced copy. So, and one of the things that I liked was that you provided really logical, you know, it was just very, you know, this is the way it is. So why not do this, this, and this, or why not improve your communication? You know, something along those lines. And so just for those out there, I mean, it's written in that form that I felt very comfortable, you know, reading it and feeling like putting myself in someone else's position and saying, yeah, I think that they'd feel comfortable reading this and getting these answers, you know. So, but anyway, I just wanted to share that part of it. You know, that just when you were just talking about some of these questions, you know, are these the ones, because you refer to some of them as like the taboo questions, you know, are those the ones that are quite like the taboo questions, the ones that where they're talking more about, I don't know why I'm feeling this way, or are there others that are kind of falling to that taboo area?
Yeah, those are some of them. You know, when you get into motherhood, I have questions about women feeling bored when taking care of their baby, even feeling resentful towards the baby for now getting all the attention. You know, those are things women do not want to admit, but it's something that happens. Liking one child more than the other. You know, of course, we love all of our children equally, but sometimes you do have a preference, especially after having a baby. One of the really tricky ones that I spent almost a month working on, you know, with the support of psychologists, was women that have really scary thoughts about something happening to their baby. And in some cases, these thoughts involve the mother being the one to inflict the harm. Mm-hmm. And for obvious reasons, that can be terrifying to a lot of women. And they don't want to talk about it because they're afraid that somebody will, you know, call Child Protective Services.
Judge them. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really, you know, got deep into that. I experienced that a little bit. And when talking with the psychologist, you know, they said it's actually so common. Almost all women have some thoughts like that. And usually it's caused by postpartum anxiety, postpartum OCD. But the really big thing that I, you know, want to convey to women, if you experience that, it's if you recognize that those thoughts don't feel good, that they are, you know, wrong, that it's something that really makes you uncomfortable, then you're fine. I mean, you should still seek support because it doesn't feel good to have those thoughts, but right. You're not at risk of actually doing those things to your baby. There's a very, very small percentage of women that experience postpartum psychosis. And during that, you don't realize that the thoughts are bad. You think, oh, this is a great idea. I should act on that. And that is very serious and requires immediate attention. Mm-hmm. But that was one of the most fascinating questions to me and one that I recognized as incredibly taboo. Women are really afraid to talk about that phenomenon.
Yeah, and I can see that. But you know, if you think about it from the standpoint that if all of us were judged on our thoughts alone, we would all be in trouble.
Yep. Good point.
If there's anybody that says that they wouldn't, I think they're either trying to deceive us or themselves. You know, we get questions that come in. Again, I thank those people that take the time to send the questions in, and I appreciate those. I know that people work in the middle of the day, so they send them in ahead of time. And so we have some that have come in, and I have one here that this one reads, I was so glad to read that you were going to be speaking about this subject. I got pregnant with our first child during the pandemic and feel totally lost. I'm due in about 6 weeks, and I am the first in my group of friends to have a child. I didn't realize how scary this would be.
Yeah, so I can really relate to this question. So I am currently pregnant. I'm about 20 weeks along. I also was pregnant this summer, you know, more in the thick of the pandemic and miscarried. And so that, you know, was really intense navigating that without, you know, you can't bring your partner to medical appointments. And so that was traumatic in many ways, a lot because of, you know, the pandemic. But then now, you know, having a healthy pregnancy, I've had a lot of fears come up, you know, navigating where do I want to give birth, you know, and of course, women rightly so are nervous about, you know, hospitals, you know, with, not that I would ever tell anybody to get the vaccine or not, but when you're pregnant, it can be more of a question mark. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, should I get vaccinated? And if you're not, you feel really exposed. So it is this brand new landscape for pregnant women. At the beginning of the pandemic, you know, I saw a video, a woman was going to a prenatal appointment and she had to pull up outside the clinic and they came out like in a full hazmat suit to do her check, which of course is like for her safety. But it just really hit me that the type of care women are receiving now is so incredibly different. And we already have, you know, when you become pregnant, there's already kind of this set of fear that comes with it. And then that fear, because of the pandemic, has just been exaggerated so much, you know, so the work, you know, around that fear release, you know, the tips that I offer in the book, it's so much more important now because there's just so much more fear. And so I really relate to her and have so much compassion because I'm in the thick of it with you. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Now you mentioned that you yourself had a miscarriage. How did this impact the material in the book? Because I'm assuming this is happening at the same time that you're writing this book.
Yeah. It happened right after, you know, I turned it in, but of course it was before all the editing. So, you know, there's two main questions that deal with pregnancy loss. And when I originally wrote them, it was more from, you know, looking at it from the outside, because obviously I'd never experienced it. So, you know, of course, asking women that had, you know, what it's like. But then when I went through it myself, of course, it gave me this new depth of understanding for what it's really like and what it feels like on both sides. Because I've had family members experience the loss and have been the person trying to support them. And then suddenly I was the person that needed support. So I went and edited heavily the two questions that navigate this topic. And it was really, that was really cathartic to me to feel like, okay, there is some reason why I went through this, or I could, you know, I could feel more of a sense of purpose. Like maybe I can support some other women going through this, or again, helping a loved one that's navigating it. So yeah, it really impacted those sections.
Well, we have another question by a pregnant woman, and it's a different concern that she has in the sense of what we've already been talking about, but I can kind of see this. And I might have been guilty of this myself at one time, but this one reads, I'm 6.5 months pregnant and suddenly my husband has been acting strangely as if I am a porcelain doll. He doesn't want me to go biking, take walks by myself, go to exercise classes. I feel that I need to stay active and healthy, but no matter what I show him to the contrary, he insists that the delivery is only 3 months away. Why chance anything going wrong? And so, you know, I feel that I'm sort of being smothered. How do I suggest, or how do you suggest that I handle this with him? And this is from Audrey in New Orleans.
Great, great question, Audrey. And I'm sure you're not alone. I always talk about our culture so much, but really we have painted pregnant women as like these, like you said, like these porcelain dolls, you know, like, oh, don't do too much or you might hurt yourself. Luckily that has become pretty outdated. You know, pretty much any doctor now will say, and you can pass this on to your partner, tell him it's actually more of a detriment, especially if you're having a healthy pregnancy, more of a detriment to stay at home, to not go outside, to not be active than to really, you know, continue doing, for the most part, you know, what you were doing before you became pregnant. And most doctors will say that, you know, really you can do the same exercise, the same physical activities within reason, right? That you were doing before, and that's good for you. You know, your body can handle it. That's not going to hurt the baby. And again, if you have certain things come up, your doctor is, or midwife is going to let you know, this is going on. These are certain things that I would like you to stay away from, but they're going to let you know. It's not going to be some mystery. So yeah, to let him know, actually, again, the best thing I can do for myself is to get on that bike, to go for a walk outside, to not treat myself like I just need to stay cocooned. Because it is, yeah, so beneficial emotionally and physically for mother and baby to get out there.
And I think that, I mean, based on the timeline that she lists on this, it's very possible that her initial appointments with her doctor, that her husband wasn't allowed to go. So maybe now she says, you know what, honey, maybe you need to go with me and hear it from the doctor's mouth.
Yes. Yes. And I mentioned that so many times in the book. It's like, if your partner is like, no, that's not true, take them to your appointment. And so often when you hear it from a doctor, from a medical professional, it really sinks in. Because for whatever reason, sometimes with our own partners, it's like, I don't think you know what you're talking about. But again, when it is somebody that's in that professional capacity, especially a doctor or a midwife, we believe it. So that's a great tip for her.
All right. Our guest is Bailey Gaddis. The book is Asking for a Pregnant Friend, 101 Answers to Questions About Pregnancy, Childbirth, and Motherhood. We're going to take a break right now, but we will be right back. Stay with us. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
So, Bailey, one of the things that you write about in the book is that some women, part of the shame issue is that they're kind of ashamed because they're feeling a disappointment when they discover the baby's sex. Is this something that you experienced, and how do you recommend women work through this?
Yeah, so this question directly came from my own experience. When I was pregnant with my son, I was so sure that he was a girl. And when they showed me the penis on the ultrasound, I started crying. Because back then, you know, now you can do a blood test around 12 weeks. But when I was pregnant with him, you had to wait till the 20-week ultrasound. So I had like 18 weeks where in my mind, I was imagining having a girl and all the things I would do. And then when I realized that all those expectations, at least originally, I thought all those expectations were now just like blown up. Mm-hmm. And so I had a couple of days of intense grief, you know, to be honest. And then I got to the other side and started working through it. And so what I tell women now is, number one, let yourself feel sad, you know, because it's normal to, a lot of people have a preference, you know, even if they don't want to admit it, for a boy or a girl. So let yourself have a day or two where you just release those emotions. But then realize, you know, number one, we don't know what the child's gender is going to be, right? You know, just because they're a certain sex, who knows how they'll identify. And in regards to all those expectations, there are very few things that, you know, you can do with a boy that you can't do with a girl, and vice versa, right? You know, you love them the same, you can go on the same adventures, you support them the same way. So that was really helpful for me. And then realizing, again, like the unique little individual that is meant to come to you is coming to you. And of course, you know, I, now having my son, I can't imagine having any other child. And I'm so grateful, you know, that he is who he is. And something else that I found helpful, because guilt comes up a lot after feeling disappointment when you find out the sex. About a week after I discovered that he was a boy, I wrote a letter to him, you know, just, and I never gave it to him, but it was just kind of a way to say, yeah, I was disappointed at first, but I'm so grateful for you. And it just kind of felt like this way to kind of like apologize. And for me, that was helpful. And it's something I suggest in the book, but it is very, very common. And again, women don't need to feel shame for it. You know, we have a preference, and then if it's different, it's okay.
Now, how does the woman deal with it when the husband or father had a preference and they're taught, you know, and then they find out in the same situation that where you found out something different, if they were in, you know, really looking for one sex or the other, and it turned out to be the other, how can they best deal with that? And is that one of the questions that you answer in the book?
Yeah, you know, I address it, and the main thing that I say is the way you address it is very similar to the way you would navigate it with yourself. So number one, allowing them to feel those feelings, you know, because getting angry or trying to shut it down is just going to exaggerate the frustration or disappointment they might be feeling. So allow them to feel it, and knowing, like with most emotions and initial reactions, they're going to pass. So give them some time to just process. And then you can talk to them about the same things I just mentioned. It's like, you know, look, if, you know, if you were expecting a boy and now you find out you're having a girl, you know, if you were wanting to play baseball with the boy or do X, Y, and Z, you can do all of those things with a girl. You know, I mean, all of those hopes and dreams you had about parenting that child, they can be exactly the same. I mean, really, now helping a girl navigate her period and teaching a boy to not pee on the toilet seat are really like two of the few things that, like, with that are pretty specific to sex. But beyond mm-hmm. that, you know, you don't have to feel like your life with the child is going to be so incredibly different. So yeah, supporting them again in a similar way as you would support yourself.
All right. Well, one of the things that I know about this show is based on the demographics that I've been told is that we have a predominant number of women as viewers or listeners. But if you were talking just to the men, what would you tell them as to how they can be as supportive as possible so that the woman is the least possibility of feeling the shame? Not that they can control it, and that isn't my point, but the things that we can do to at least stack the deck in the favor of things working out as well as possible.
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the main things is to ask her questions, you know, really put in a lot of effort to understand, you know, what she is experiencing, make her feel like you are a safe space to discuss these things, and even tell her that, you know, you can say, look, if anything is coming up for you that feels scary or strange, I want you to know that you can come to me. I'm a safe person to talk to. I'm not going to judge you. It sounds strange that you would have to say that, but again, a lot of times, you know, you love your partner and you feel so comfortable with them, but sometimes we need that permission. Especially when you're pregnant and you're feeling so vulnerable and sometimes so scared to, again, share everything that you're feeling, especially if you feel maybe guilty or shameful about those thoughts. So yeah, to really let her know you are a safe space. And again, to continually check in, don't just say it once, but almost every day say, hi, how are you feeling? Is there anything you want to talk about? Like, can I get you anything? Really make her feel loved and supported.
Well, and along those lines of feeling loved, one of the things I know you touch on in the book is sex.
Oh, yeah. That's a big topic.
And so starting from the male perspective, from my standpoint, is you feel like you kind of need permission for everything because you don't know, you know. So, and which is then different maybe than the way in which you get involved when they're not pregnant. Sometimes you just want to be aggressive, or sometimes you just want to be romantic, and you do things that are not, you're not being vocal, you're just being. But I think once the woman is pregnant, now it's, you have to keep asking. And at what point does that then become a problem? Because woman's like, you didn't have to ask before, and trust me, I'm still a woman and I still have desires, you know. So again, what would you, again, we're, you know, if we're, so women, I know I'm saying that I want her to speak to the men, but it is for your benefit too. So if you're going to tell them, how do we handle that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I talk about communication so much, but having that like initial conversation and letting them know, like, so look, this is the way we have kind of navigated sex in the past. How do you feel about continuing in that way? Like, are you comfortable with me, you know, still being a little bit more assertive, you know, touching the same parts of your body that I have touched before, and seeing how she feels about it? She might say like, yeah, no, I mean, I feel totally comfortable continuing with our sex life the way it's been. She might say, you know what, my breasts, for example, have like been feeling really sore. That's kind of like a no fly zone right now. And she can let you know, communicate. I'm fine with it. I want you to lead the way as much as possible, because again, it might be no different, and it might be really, really different for the woman. So yeah, just checking in occasionally. You don't have to be obsessive about it, but yeah.
No, and I like when one of the last comments you made was, you know, just remind them that it might be, you know, better for them to lead the way for a little while. Because I think it does go back into what one of the questions was earlier from one of the listeners, which is, you know, we are kind of looking at them kind of like a porcelain doll, and we're afraid that we're going to break something, you know? And so, you know, all of a sudden we're sort of, you know, being a little more standoffish, and how is that maybe misinterpreted? Because I know that that in the book you talk about depression, and you talk about the feeling of not being wanted, and how do we keep from confusing this? No, I'm just treating you like, a little more delicate, not that I don't want you. You know, how do we navigate this to make it a win-win situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, going back to telling her, it's like, look, I feel nervous about touching you maybe in a way that might be too rough or making you feel pressured to have sex, you know, so let her know where you're coming from, because again, there can be so much misinterpretation when we're not checking in and we're not letting our partner know where we're coming from. And that's how, you know, we learn, right, what the person needs. So if you're letting your female partner know, look, I'm feeling nervous about sex or this or that, like, what are your thoughts on it? Like, how can we work through this? So she knows, like, okay, it's not personal. It's not because he thinks or she thinks I'm too fat, or, you know, all of the insecurities that can come up for us when we're pregnant. I know the beginning of this pregnancy, I gained a lot of weight really fast, felt really insecure. And I told my husband, I said, I need you to give me constant reassurance because I'm feeling really insecure, you know, and to just say it, you know, for the women, be open. For the men, let your partner know how you're feeling. And yeah, I mean, it can lead to conversations that are initially a little uncomfortable, like that's part of it. But typically on the other side is a deeper connection, more understanding, and a smoother journey into parenthood.
I like it. Now we have another question that has come in. This one reads, when I had my first child, I was totally unprepared for the postpartum depression I experienced. It began when I could not breastfeed the third week in. I felt totally alone. My mother kept saying it was normal to feel down and I would get over it if I just kept a positive attitude. Well, I wish it had been that easy. It says, I have ordered your book because my best friend will be having her first baby next month, and she has a mom like mine. And then in quotes, they have suffer and endure it type. I so agree that it is up to our generation to break the silence and become more aware of what's going on during our pregnancies and after our babies arrive. Be assured, we will be sharing and talking up this book. And this is from Mary in Utah.
well, Mary, first of all, thank you for your support. And postpartum depression is a huge issue. And yeah, I know I've talked to my mother and especially my grandmother. They both say, yep, nobody talked about it. You back then were seen as like weak if you admitted that you were feeling sad, because people would say, well, you have this healthy, beautiful baby. What's there to be sad about? And it was just brushed aside. Luckily, in the past, especially the last 5 years, people are talking about it. You know, women are being more open. And it's important to understand, you know, the difference too between what they call postpartum blues and postpartum depression. So because of a drop in hormones, it's really common to feel just kind of melancholy for about a week after having the baby. But then that should lift as the hormones start to balance out. You'll probably still feel tired and a little bit confused, but for the most part, I'm able to regulate your emotions. You don't feel too sad. But if that sadness continues, if it gets more serious, if it's causing anxiety or kind of OCD, which is really common, seek support as soon as you can, because oftentimes, like I experienced it. I didn't seek support for a year. And when I finally did, I did need medication and I needed talk therapy. Within a month, I felt like a brand new person. And I was so frustrated with myself that I didn't, number one, admit how I was feeling earlier and then seek that support. And it's amazing that it is less of a taboo topic now, you know, that you're not going to be seen as a bad mother if you admit to those feelings. So and sadly, again, seeking support from our moms sometimes can be great, sometimes cannot be, you know, too supportive, and to realize they come from a different generation where, again, it's they still see it as taboo, but luckily our generation can change that and to speak up about it and to, yeah, seek the support you deserve.
Yeah, and I think there's so much more information now. Generations back did not know that that you can balance your hormones, that they didn't know what bioidenticals were. And fortunately for me, having this show, I've had guests on and I have learned quite a bit about, this. And it's so amazing once you realize it, and you go, oh, okay, well, now that makes sense, and I had a guy that was telling me one time how he was upset over the fact that, after they had a child, as he said, his wife was going through mood swings and stuff. And I told him, I said, now that I've learned some of this stuff, let me explain something. I said, even as a guy, I said, if my hormones aren't balanced, one of the ways that I know it is, I start crying at a movie on baseball. Okay, well, guess what? That means that my hormones are off and I probably should get them checked. Well, try going through pregnancy and tell me if your hormones aren't going to be off. So, I think there's so much more information now that there really isn't any reason why we can't, get the answers and get the help that we need and make it a win-win situation for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, getting those hormones checked is so key.
Absolutely.
A lot of control over us.
So, and as we're running kind of close on time right now, what would you say is the most important thing that you want expectant mothers to know or to gain from reading the book?
Yeah, so one of the big things is to realize that really nothing that you think or feel makes you like abnormal or means that you're going to be like a bad mother. This is a really wild, wild journey. Unexpected stuff comes up, so to give yourself a lot of understanding, a lot of grace, a lot of self-love. And if you notice, that negative self-talk, saying you shouldn't be feeling that, that's wrong, blah, 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 to notice it and to even look at yourself in the mirror and say, I'm going to step out of this self-talk. I'm going to choose love. I know that, again, nothing I can feel or think is bad or wrong. It's just part of this crazy journey that I'm on. So yeah, give yourself a lot of compassion. And I'm hoping this book will really help with that, to give women a place, a safe space to explore what they're going through and then hopefully find some information that can, lead the way into healing and relief.
So what age would you think would be a good time for girls to start learning about this? As far as with your book, would you say, they're going to get information that might make them make better decisions if they start reading this as a teenager?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, I remember, my mom is so great. She's like a fertility nurse and RN, very progressive. When I was about 11, she started to like talk to me more, not just about like how babies are made. I learned that when I was like four, like very young. But she started to, talk to me about, and I think my brother had, been born a few years before, and really helped me, reprogram my beliefs about birth. So yeah, I think like 10, 11, as girls are starting to get into that period of time where they might be, having their period, and going through that first, big transition hormonally, emotionally, I think that can be a great time to start exploring, pregnancy and birth and, how that impacts us and how it can be a really beautiful thing. So yeah, pretty young.
Yeah. What about in school? In other words, do you feel that they are educating our kids correctly or at the right time? And if not, what would you change?
Yeah, I mean, as far as I know, with a lot of public schools, and again, when I was in public school, I have a much younger brother, and I asked him, like, what did you learn? And he's like, it was pretty much just sex education. And, we're in California, so it wasn't, like, I'm originally from Texas, where a lot of times it's just, like, abstinence, like, that is the way. In California, they teach you a little bit more, but they don't go at all into pregnancy and what to expect from that. My brother said the first time he learned anything about that was in a biology class at university. So I think that, yeah, it would be really important to, again, talk about sex education, of course, and then to just give, you know, women, men, boys, girls, some insight into what that journey is like, to start to help to reprogram some beliefs about it. And just help boys and girls know like what is on the other side of, you know, becoming pregnant. Starting the conversation a little bit earlier.
All right. Well, our guest is Bailey Gaddis. Bailey, for those that are listening or if they're thinking, you know, they're watching or they're listening and they're going, you know, this might not be for me, but I know such and such. What's the best way for them to get in touch with you or the best way to get the book?
Yeah, absolutely. So a great hub to connect with me and all of my work is my website, baileygaddis.com. With both of my books, you can find them on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, all of the places where books are sold. But you can easily find links on my website. You can connect with me directly, find my blog, all the social media accounts. So yeah, my website is a great place to start.
All right. Well, Bailey, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it. And good luck with your new child.
Thank you, Alan.
and stay in touch. Maybe as you get a little closer, you start looking into what the next book's going to be. Who knows? At the rate you're going, maybe the next one's going to be, how do we start getting prepared for preteens?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely in my future. Oh, thank you so much.
All right, well, this again next Monday when we are joined by Regina Louise to discuss her new book. It's called Permission Granted. It's called Kick-Ass Strategies to Bootstrap Your Way to Unconditional Self-Love. And please visit our archives of past interviews at AnswersForTheFamily.com or subscribe to our show through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeatChu, YugiTube, and many other platform podcasts. And if you like what you hear, leave a review. Let us know what you're thinking. If you have some suggestions, you have some questions, send them to us, because I want you to know that we really appreciate it. So for everybody out there, be good human beings. Be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.